1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back once again to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill back with you. Thanks for coming along. This is a good one. Glad you're with us. So coming up in this version of the off-season podcast, we're going to hear from Lloyd McClendon. It's a long conversation that Mike Blowers, Aaron Goldsmith, Shannon Dreher on the Hot Stove Show just had with Lloyd McClendon, and they touch all kinds of bases. It's a long conversation. You'll enjoy it. That's coming up on this edition of the podcast. We're also going to touch on right field. We're mostly going to talk about the Seth Smith acquisition, and I've called on one of my favorites. We're going to talk to Corey Brock coming up. He follows the Padres. In fact, you can find his writing there on the official Padres website. Fantastic follow on Twitter. He's outstanding. Also a local product, which is fantastic. But Corey Brock, he is excellent. He is coming up in just a few minutes. He watched Seth Smith play all last season, so he's going to give us a little in-depth scouting report. And also we're going to touch on the Padres a little bit because I think they're going to be a very interesting team to watch in the National League. And, of course, the Mariners butt heads with the Padres every single year, so we'll touch on that. But very interesting conversation about Seth Smith. So we'll talk some right field. And I think it's a pretty interesting conversation to have because I talk about it all the time, is really what you're looking for in terms of offense. You're looking for production in spots. Doesn't really matter how you get it. You just need production in each spot. Now, it's easiest when you can plug in a Robinson Cano at second base and get your production that way, or a Kyle Seager at third base and get it that way. But, you know, especially in this day and age in Major League Baseball, I don't think there is a team right now that looks at their starting nine and knows exactly where they're getting their production from each spot. I mean, that's just the way offenses are right now. And when the Mariners were looking at the right field, there's a question mark where their production was coming from. But I think they potentially have a duo that can give them fantastic production, maybe even approaching all-star production potentially when it's all said and done in right field, when you combine what they're capable of doing. The platoon with Seth Smith from the left side and Justin Ruggiano from the right side really playing to their strengths. And as long as they can stay healthy, they have a chance to really be productive. You look at it. Now, Ruggiano last year played with the Cubs, age 32 season, had trouble staying healthy, but played 81 games, 250 plate appearances, 6 homers, 28 ribbies, 13 doubles, 18 walks, batted .281 along the way, a .766 OPS. Smith, his first year with the Padres last year, spent the first part of his major league career with the Colorado Rockies, then went to the A's for 2 years, and last year with the Padres, batted .266, 12 homers, 48 ribbies, and 521 plate appearances, and walked 69 times. Now, what's important about both guys is digging into the numbers and digging into their sides of the plate, because you combine them and they have a chance to be pretty impressive. So you look at the last three seasons in Major League Baseball, 2012, 2013, 2014. Guys against left-handed pitchers with at least 300 plate appearances. So, you know, not a ton, but a healthy margin. So 300 plate appearances the last three seasons. If you sort Major League Baseball by OPS, I'm just going to read the list because I think it's telling. Andrew McCutchen is number one. He has just destroyed lefties the last 3 years. And, you know, the names at the top of this list I don't think surprise you. It's McCutchen, Goldschmidt, Stanton, Braun, Worth, Posey, Rosario, Ramirez, Miguel Cabrera, David Wright, Josh Donaldson's 11, Encarnacion is 12. Matt Holliday, 13. Kadire, 14. Justin Upton is 15. Cody Ross, 16. Ruggiano is 17. The last three seasons, 17th in OPS against left-handed pitching. 347 plate appearances, 18 homers, 52 ribbies, 28 doubles, batting .288. That's some serious production. LaCroix is 18th right behind him, and there's Nelson Cruz checking in at 19, a .922 OPS against lefties last three seasons, batting .303, 29 doubles. He has smacked 19 home runs. And then it just keeps going. Bautista, Longoria, Kemp, Mike Trout, Molina rounds out the top 24. So, first of all, something we've talked about quite a bit is Mariners against left-handed starters. That should certainly help when you plug in two guys like that. But, you know, that's the left side of the platoon. That is not bad. You know, as long as he can stay healthy, that's impressive. Also a nice bat to have off the bench in games where he's not starting. When you're facing a tough lefty out of the pen, you need a pinch hitter. I mean, those are some big names that he's included with the last three seasons. Now, the left side of the platoon. So let's look at that. Now, this list is longer, but I think it says the same. If you take the last three seasons, 212 to 2014, and more plate appearances, so over 1,000 plate appearances, you know, facing righties, so a little more regular, so we extend the plate appearances. By the way, Cano is tied with David Ortiz, 9-9-1 against righties. He is just crushed righties. Seager's on this list as well, sitting at number 38. But Seth Smith is 50th on the list, which is good. I mean, there's a lot of productive hitters. You know, leading into him, it's Seager, Pujols, Sandoval, Bruce, Carlos Gomez, Napoli, Lucroy, Zimmerman, Adam Jones. I mean, those are the type of hitters leading into Seth Smith at 50. Batting OPS 793 in that time frame. He's whacked 30 homers, driven in 118 with a .263 batting average. By the way, Nelson Cruz just behind him, 54th on the list, a 791 OPS. So I think potentially with those two guys, the Mariners have a real chance to get some serious production from the right field slot. Smith, Ruggiano, as long as both guys stay healthy and on the field. We're going to dive more into Seth Smith. We'll touch on Ruggiano more as we move through the offseason. But right now, let's get a little more detail, a little more in depth on the Mariners' newest acquisition in right field.
Well, we have a special guest with us, Corey Brock. You can see him on Twitter, at Follow the Padres. Fantastic follow on Twitter, not only about the Padres, but about baseball in general. And he's a local guy, too, so this is fantastic. Great excuse to talk to Corey Brock. Corey, thanks for the time. We certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, Gary, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no doubt. So it's been a big offseason for the Mariners, and one of the focuses has been to try and improve the offense a little bit, especially with the hole in right field. So the trade with the Padres a few days ago, picking up Seth Smith, and it looks like he'll be the strong side of a platoon in right field for the M's. Give us an idea of the kind of hitter the Mariners have in Seth Smith.
Yeah, well, the Padres didn't have Seth very long, not as long as they would have probably had planned on, and certainly not as long as he had planned on. You know, they traded for Seth Smith a year ago this time from the A's and gave up a very good relief arm in Luke Gregerson, who obviously Mariner fans are well aware of during his 1 year with the A's. Now he's with the Astros. But, the kind of a similar situation, Gary, where the Padres were looking for a little platoon help, a guy that can give them a lift offensively, especially against right-handed pitching, and traditionally had really feasted on righties in his career and did a nice job of that for the Padres last year, especially in the first half of the year. It earned a contract extension, and they were generally very happy with his production. You know, this is a big ballpark here in San Diego. They've made some adjustments. It's funny, these parallels between the two teams are very interesting. Their needs, the ballpark, many other ones too. But, you know, his power, you know, he has some power that's reachable, you know, at Petco Park, and I believe that power will play, you know, at Safeco Field. There's some doubles power there. He could use all fields. I think he's comfortable hitting anywhere in the lineup. You hear the term professional hitter, which I always kind of laugh at. But, you know, this is a guy that's been around long enough now and, you know, certainly has a book on, and I think this is important, you know, has a book on American League pitching and, you know, certainly won't be new coming back to the American League and getting a chance to look at some of these guys. So I think it's a very good acquisition. And, I think the Mariners, they paid a price, too, and a price that they probably – you know, to my knowledge and what I was told in Brandon Maurer, a guy that wasn't on the table as far as trade talks were concerned until recently, a guy that they weren't willing to part with. But, you know, this is truly one of those deals where you want to improve your club. Sometimes you have to trade asset for asset. So I think this is a deal that could benefit both teams.
It's been an interesting offseason, to say the least, for the Padres. And kind of a unique circumstance, as you mentioned, he just gets extended and then dealt, you know, within a few months after the extension. It's just a case of, you know, the crowded outfield now with all the major acquisitions the Padres made.
Yeah, and that's a funny thing is, you know, they didn't go into this offseason certainly looking to move Seth Smith. You know, I think he was one of the most productive bats they had in what was clearly, and let's make no mistake about this, what was clearly the worst offense in baseball last year. And, you know, a guy they would certainly want to hang on to, a very club-friendly deal, $6.5 million over each of the next 2 years. You know, even though he is a, a left-handed batter and would probably, at least in the situation in Seattle, would be part of a platoon. He's going to be in the lineup more often than not just because you're going to face more righties than lefties. I think it's a very club-friendly deal for the amount of production you get. But done before A.J. Preller was hired as general manager in August. And he, as he set about trying to improve the club, he didn't look around at specific positions and say, okay, well, we need to find some the best third baseman. We need to find the best second baseman. He's looking at the best productive offensive player regardless of position. And it just so happens that three of the main ones he picked up were outfielders. Matt Kemp was the first piece to go, the Will Myers trade with the Rays, and then, of course, another big piece, getting Justin Upton from the Braves. And it's funny, Gary, just when, as I list these names off the top of my head, it still seems surreal to think that these guys will all be wearing Padre uniforms in 2015 just because, you know, this has been a club that's been, at least in my time here, first year was 2007 covering them, a club that's, you know, been in the lower half, lower third, I should say, probably in payroll. It hasn't delved too much into free agency. Kind of been built on run prevention. The ballpark has a lot to do with that, but haven't really invested in terms of adding major offensive pieces like this. And they paid a steep price. They moved some notable prospects, but, you know, I think A.J. Preller in his first year feels like they can make some headway in the National League West and can challenge for the division title and a postseason berth. And that's a And who's to say he's wrong? It's been a volatile division. We've seen a lot of crazy things. But, yeah, again, in terms of Seth Smith, and I think they made that clear to Seth that, you know, as they went about this process of adding guys, that, you know, this wasn't about trying to move you. It was trying to improve the club. And in doing so, we had a kind of a glut of outfielders here. And, you know, lo and behold, they had a deal on the table with Seattle that worked out pretty well for everyone.
What did you see from Seth Smith defensively?
You know, I think he's fine. He's a corner outfielder. He's a right fielder. The arm, it's an average major league arm. He'll do fine. There's nothing particularly tricky, I don't believe. I think right field plays pretty fair at Safeco Field, if memory serves me correct. Yeah. Certainly there's some ground to cover there. I think he'll do okay. I would say he rates as an average major league outfielder. I wouldn't expect, I don't want to sound like I'm bagging on the guy, but, you know, this isn't a Gold Glove winner by any means. This is an offensive player who can play the outfield and, maybe he'll get a chance at DH on occasion and maybe come off the bench and give you on days where he doesn't start, he'll be able to give you a very good at-bat, you know, against a tough right-handed batter late in the game. I think there's some good upside here. But, defense, probably not his forte. But then again, he's not going to embarrass himself out there.
Visiting with Corey Brock at Follow the Padres on Twitter. Tremendous follow. Do you have any idea? Maurer had such an interesting year last year. He was just lights out of the bullpen, struggled as a starter. Do you have an idea of what the Padres are going to do with Brandon Maurer?
I think with the current composition of their team, he's going to be given a shot to win a bullpen job. And I think they're looking at his most recent work in that second half with Seattle last year, his ability to miss bats, his ability to throw a ton of strikes. I look at the walk number. I think he only walked 5 and 30-something innings once he was moved into the bullpen. And there still may be some upside there as a starter, and I'm certainly not closing the door on that. I just think in the time being that he may slot in as a potential seventh-inning guy with another former Mariner, Sean Kelly, who they recently acquired, pitching the eighth inning and setting up Joaquin Benoit to form a pretty formidable back end of the bullpen. There are some pretty power right-handed arms with some good sliders. So, I think he's going to slide right into a late inning, high leverage role. But with the caveat, though, that when he comes in the spring training, it might be like, hey, we're not shutting the door on you here in terms of a starter, maybe even for this year or certainly beyond. But I just seem to think that, they'll say that this will all get sorted out in spring training. But I just think his best fit immediately would be to, slide him into late inning relief and let him go from there.
Yeah, it's been interesting. You look at the Padres from the outside, and it seems like the rotation has been strong year after year. The questions have always been about the offense, and with the acquisitions, with the offense and the bullpen as well, what are the expectations in your mind for the Padres this season?
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, just because there haven't really been any, at least not in terms of, hey, this is going to be, if you're a fan, as you roll into the new season, like, hey, this is going to be our year, just when, especially in terms of when you look at roster composition and who do you really build around, who do you get excited about? I think in my time here, they haven't had very many impactful offensive players, and basically none that they've brought through the system, which I think has really been a detriment for them. I mean, all these teams, I realize, lean on their farm systems, and the Mariners have done a very nice job of that, but the Padres have really fallen short of that. I think Chase Headley may be the closest thing to an impact player that they've drafted and developed, and he's moved on to New York now. But now you have some real legitimate guys with legitimate track records that are going to be part of your lineup. And what it's also going to do, it's going to allow the other guys who return, the other guys who are coming back, Jed Jerko, your second baseman, Carlos Quinton, if he's healthy, Derek Norris is going to be the catcher. They acquired him as well from the A's. It's going to allow these other guys to slide in the positions that they're a little bit more comfortable in terms of the lineup, maybe spots where they can get a little better pitch set, maybe get some more fastballs to hit. So I think the acquisition of these guys is going to help the lineup in general just based on the fact that they're there. But I think it's going to benefit the other guys who are coming back just because they're not going to be leaned on to bat in places in the order where they really don't belong but had to out of necessity.
You think with the way the Dodgers and their free-spending ways, you think they've changed the way some teams are approaching it in the division?
It's really curious to see how they've gone about that this winter, and it's been fascinating. This is a team that won 94 games last year, and I don't want to quite say that they've gone through and they've blown this thing up, but they've really almost gone through and blown this thing up a little bit. I think Andrew Friedman is looking at this thing through a little different lens, and they have Josh Burns there, who was a former GM in San Diego, and the former Oakland assistant GM there as well. So it's really curious to see how they're building this. They've lost a lot. I think the right-handed power that they've lost alone with Ramirez and Kemp being gone, I think that's going to hurt them. It's going to force guys like this Jock Peterson, who I'm really excited to see. He's basically now he's in the starting lineup. Still has some very good players there. Adrian Gonzalez, who we know a lot about from his time in San Diego. Yasmani Grandal, who they traded with the Padres to get. The pitching's obviously going to always be very good. Jimmy Rollins, I'll be curious to see what he has left in the tank. Crawford, Puig. You know, this is still a very good team. I don't know if it's a 94-win team again, but I still think there's a lot of talent there. And, you know, I still think it may be their division to lose, and which sounds funny based on what the Giants have done, but I still feel like the Giants are a team that just kind of catches fire when they and this is no knock on them, they kind of catch fire when they absolutely have to. You know, listen, we saw them in late September in San Diego, and you know, granted, it's a small sample size. It's a short series, 3-4-game series. But I just did not see much life there, Gary. And then, lo and behold, they get into the postseason and something else happens. Another switch goes off, and maybe it's Bochy, maybe it's the pitching. But, wow. So it's going to be a fun division.
No doubt. I think the Padres are going to be one of the most fascinating teams in baseball to watch this year, just with all the new pieces, the new parts, and that city certainly – deserves the team to get behind. It's been a while since they've really been in contention. So it should be a fun year, and I know this won't be our last visit. Thanks a lot for the time.
Thanks, Gary. Anytime.
There it is. Good stuff there from Corey Brock. We'll talk to him more down the road. He's outstanding. And, I think right field has real potential to be productive. I'm excited about what they've done in right field with the platoon. Let's hear more about it with the skipper. This was a great conversation. Aaron Goldsmith, Shannon Dreyer, Mike Blowers, a chance to have a long conversation with the Mariners manager, Lloyd McClendon. Here it is.
The manager of your Seattle Mariners, Lloyd McClendon, joining us from back home. And Lloyd, what I'd have to imagine is fairly chilly Indiana. How are things back in the heartland these days?
Well, I'm sitting here in my bathing suit, so it's just fine.
I hope that's in a hot tub then. Or is that just a nightly ritual? Who knows? Reminiscing about last year. Well, Lloyd, it's
actually pretty cold, guys.
I have to imagine. So happy New Year to you, Lloyd. We really appreciate you carving out some time and joining us here tonight. Last year was such a fun year for everybody involved. And it's been fun as we were kind of approaching New Year's Eve. There was a lot of chatter about kind of some of the favorite moments for the Mariners last season and some of the ones that were brought up. That 5-run ninth inning at Fenway Park against the Red Sox, against Koji Uehara, which was so amazing. Felix, of course, orchestrated those 15 strikeouts in St. Pete. Game 161 with Lomo's double to tie it up was incredible. As you've had a chance in your bathing suit or not, Lloyd, to think about last season, what are some of the moments that you have thought about the most this offseason?
Well, I mean, obviously it was a tremendous year for us in a lot of different ways. I was really proud of my club, the way they responded under adversity. They really bounced back on several different occasions and showed what they were really made of. And that was pretty special.
Lloyd, when you look at last year, one of the things that I commented on a lot and saw every day was the amount of work that you and your staff put in and the guys showed up on a daily basis, especially when you were home and you had the ballpark. When you look at that going into this year, and a lot of the same guys, there are a few changes, and we're excited about a number of them, but when you look at that, do you expect to have the same type of work ethic as these guys move forward this year as far as a daily routine of these guys going out and doing their early stuff?
Yeah, I do. I think, Mike, it was kind of unique. It was, we talked about a core covenant and the guys buying into a program, and I think my guys did that, It was a give-and-take situation. I gave them things, and then they gave me things. And I think in the end, it all worked out. But I think the one thing that we would all agree is that there's no substitute for hard work and quality work. And I think those guys put it in on a daily basis.
Lloyd, a lot has been made of the moves that the Mariners have made in the offseason, but I think that some of the biggest progress that can be made with this team are with players that were there last year, young players that we saw take a step forward next year. What are fair expectations for some of your young players going into next year?
Well, I think it's fair to expect players to get better on all fronts. Particularly from a maturity standpoint, knowledge of the league. I think they all understand what it takes to be a productive major league player and from a physical and mental standpoint, and I think they buy into that program.
It's good to be talking with Mariners manager Lloyd McClendon here on the Hot Stove Show, 710 ESPN. And Lloyd, it's fun to kind of go back in recent history, the last couple of years. In April of 2013, you were at Safeco Field with the Tigers as their hitting coach. And in the seventh inning of one game, Kyle Seager was given the day off. He wasn't on the lineup card. Justin Verlander was pitching. And then all of a sudden, out of the dugout came Kyle Seager with a bat and a batting helmet. And he ripped an RBI double into left field off of Verlander as a pinch hitter. He then went on to score on a base hit following that. The Mariners beat the Tigers 2-0. You took that game in as the hitting coach of the Tigers. And then only a year later, you would, of course, go on to manage Kyle Seager in his first ever All-Star season. What a ride it has been for Kyle Seager, especially in the last calendar year. What is it that you have enjoyed the most about managing Kyle Seager?
Well, you know, Kyle's one of those guys that shows up every day, and you know what you're going to get. And I've always said this, and I've always bought into this, and I believe it. You don't always have to have the most talented and the most sexy player in the world, but if you got a guy that shows up and gives you everything he has on a daily basis, then you know what you're getting. And some days it's pretty good, and other days it may not be as good. But the one thing about Kyle Seager, you know you can write his name in the lineup, and you know what you're going to get on a daily basis. And that's something that any manager would appreciate.
I think that's interesting, Lloyd, because one of the guys that you know better than anybody, having seen him on a daily basis, is Austin Jackson. You know, it's always difficult when you're traded to a club midseason. I'm sure that there was some comfort for him knowing that you were going to be managing the club, and he's obviously had a relationship with you. But what are your expectations of Austin Jackson, and do you think showing up at spring training on time with everybody else will make a big difference in his play this year?
Well, I'd be surprised if Austin Jackson is not the player that he's capable of being. Obviously, you know, coming over late in the season with Detroit being in the playoff hunt, and then he coming to a new team that's in the playoff hunt, and the expectations are extremely high. And he probably put a lot of pressure on himself. And to some extent, I probably did him an injustice. I talked about it a little bit because he's the type of player that needs a day off, you know, at least once a week to stay strong and stay consistent. And we just couldn't afford to give him that opportunity. I mean, we just, you know, we're in the hunt. He plays tremendous defense, and I valued his defense out there on a daily basis. And, you know, looking back, I wish I would have given him a day off here and there, but I just couldn't afford to do it. But I fully expect that this guy will have a bounce back year and be the player that I know he can be, and the fans of Seattle are going to love.
Lloyd, you've talked about using spring training to make some adjustments with a couple of players, and I believe Austin Jackson might be one of them. When he got to Seattle and he was there for a little bit, you did remark to us he doesn't quite look the same with his swing. What is it that you want to do with him?
Well, you know, listen, Austin is a proven player in this league. There's not a lot of adjustments that need to be made. I think what we're going to find out, he's going to be comfortable in his own skin in Seattle. He's going to be comfortable with his surroundings. And he's going to have a fresh start. And I think he's the type of player that's a tremendously hard worker. He will shore up his weaknesses, and I think he'll do a fine job for us.
Last year, the big news was Robinson Cano coming to Seattle, and now this year, Nelson Cruz, maybe equally as big news. And you look at what happened to the Mariners last season at the DH spot, it's hard to believe, but there were 16 different players, Lloyd, that you penned as a DH for at least one game, 16 players. And when Robinson came over, you could tell that there was this sign of relief from you saying, now I got my number three hitter each and every day. I don't have to worry about filling that name in. Is there equal relief now for that DH spot, that cleanup spot with now Nelson Cruz coming to Seattle?
Well, I mean, listen, I share in the fans' frustration as far as, you know, type of lineups that you put out there. But, you know, one thing I've always said, I didn't have Barry Bonds hitting fourth. So I'm extremely happy to have Nelson Cruz, and it's nice to be able to put him in the lineup in the fourth hole every day. And, you know, one thing about Nelson, he's unique in the fact that he shows up and he's ready to play every day. And you look at his numbers, this guy wants to be in the lineup. He plays through minor nagging injuries. And, I think it's going to be a joy for us having him hit behind Robbie.
With that being said, Lloyd, last year you guys made a big step. And I thought when you look at the organization overall, it was a few years ago that they signed Felix to the long deal. Obviously, we just talked about Cano coming in last year. They bring you and your staff in to get things turned around here in Seattle. You guys certainly had a lot of success in doing that. Now you have Nelson. And you mentioned a little bit earlier when Shannon asked you the question about the younger players and expectations. But I think for the fans, they have to be excited about Nelson being here. I would assume that you would think. I know that I think it would make hopefully Robinson's job a little bit easier than what he had last year. And with that, expectations of younger guys, how do you have to balance that? Because I know at times last year you had to be awfully patient with them. But sometimes when the expectations get higher, the patience, you just can't have it. And how do you balance that?
Well, you know, it's tough. And I think that's a great question. I think one of the things that we have to understand is we have guys that have been in positions for 2 or 3 years now, and there's a natural progression, a natural maturation, and I fully expect them to take the next step. Now, obviously, we have two young kids at shortstop. We're not sure what's going to happen there. They're going to have to compete. But if you look around at our lineup, you know, you look at Ackley and left field, there's time for him to step up and take that next step and be the type of player that we fully expect him to be. And that's a conversation that we've had, and he's bought into it, and I fully expect that he will be better. Austin Jackson is a proven player. Seth Smith is a quality outfield guy that hits with power, and he knows what he's doing. Reggiano was tremendously successful against left-handed pitching. So, we look pretty good in those areas. I think we've improved quite a bit. I think our offensive numbers are going to be better. And as a result, I think it takes some of the pressure off of the younger kids that had to play minor roles or bench roles that's awfully hard to do, particularly for young kids that haven't been in the big leagues before. It is really hard to expect them to excel in those roles.
Lloyd, you mentioned the battle at shortstop, or you're going to look to see what the two have at shortstop this spring. Spring training, can be hard to evaluate players. I think you're probably not going to be going off of raw spring training numbers. What do you look for to make that determination?
Well, you know, Shannon, that's a great point. I think we know both of these young men. In my mind, I have some expectations. I think it's important that, you know, we look at them, look them in the eye, and just see what's going on. Obviously, the spring training performance will not solely dictate how we're going to go and which direction we're going to go. But you're certainly going to look for some type of maturation process as far as moving forward and stepping up in your ability to get things done. But for the most part, we know both of them pretty good.
Good to be talking with Mariners skipper Lloyd McClendon. And Lloyd, you referenced a moment ago the trade that involved Brandon Maurer and acquiring Seth Smith from the Padres. And obviously you hate to lose a lively arm like Maurer, but it's good to get a guy like Smith to fill that hole in right field or help to fill it. What is it like for you when you're back home in Indiana and Jack and company are here in Seattle? What's kind of the communication like between manager and general manager as you're talking about, hey, do you like this guy? Do you not like this guy? What do you like? What don't you like? Can you kind of walk us through how that works out?
Well, you know, Jack and I pretty much talk for the most part every day on a lot of different subjects. But, you know, obviously when it comes to players and where we want to be and which direction we want to go, we have quite a bit of conversation. And, you know, I've always tried to point out to folks that, you know, Jack is my boss, and you know, I work for him. You know, ultimately it's his decision, and I support it. I am very grateful that I work for a general manager that is very supportive and respects and likes my opinion on things. But I think in the end, you know, it's my responsibility and my job is to take the players that he provides for me and get them to perform to the best of their ability.
That being said, going into spring training, Lloyd, last year a real strength of your club was your pitching staff in the rotation and the best bullpen in the American League. As you go into spring training now, knowing that last year You have to always have that depth. Do you feel good about the situation of where the club is now with your pitching?
Well, I think Jack has pointed this out on several occasions. You know, you never have enough pitching. You're always looking for more. Having said that, I was really extremely happy with the addition of Jay Happ, a veteran left-hander that I think is going to pitch extremely well in our ballpark. You know, that if you really break down his numbers and you look at his numbers last year, I think he had 10 or 12 starts where the team in Toronto scored less than 3 runs a game for him. And in his losses, I think they averaged 1.5 runs a game. So I think this guy's going to fit in real nice for us, particularly in Safeco Field and with the additions that we've made on offense. I think it's going to even make him better.
What does that do for some of your younger pitchers or your rotation and that you have that competition going into camp in the rotation?
Well, obviously it makes us deeper. I'm hoping it makes us better. I think competition is a good thing. Obviously it's going to be tough. But, I said this before. We didn't acquire Jay Happ to be a reliever. He will be in our rotation. Now, how everything else plays out, we'll just wait and see. But, you know, guys will have an opportunity to compete in spring training, and we'll see what happens.
A few more minutes here with manager Lloyd McClendon. And, Lloyd, obviously today, earlier this morning, here in Seattle, our time zone, we had a chance to see on MLB Network the class for this year's Hall of Fame induction with Biggio, Smoltz, Pedro, and, of course, Randy Johnson. Is that something that you watch during the offseason? Is that you're tuned into?
Yeah, you know, I'm always aware of what's going on in the baseball world, and obviously, you know, the Hall of Fame is, you know, one of our biggest stages, and I'd have to say I was very disappointed in the support that, you know, Edgar got this year. I think, you know, people on that committee are really, really missing the point here. You know, we got a guy that had an on-base percentage of over 400 for 11 years in a row. That's just unheard of. And what he did from an offensive standpoint, in my mind, he's the greatest DH that ever put on a uniform, and I'm really disappointed, a little sad that it didn't happen for him this year.
You were 1-for-6 lifetime against John Smoltz. How nasty was Smoltz? Obviously, you didn't have many times to face him, but it's pretty cool that you can say you faced a Hall of Famer.
A big double off.
A big double.
And I remind him of that all the time.
Okay, I got one for you here. You've got Pedro, you've got Smoltz, and you've got Randy Johnson. You have to win one game. Who do you take?
Well, I take Randy. I mean, the big unit was pretty special. You know, the type of guy that could really just dominate a ball game and, you know, really put it away and the intimidation factor. And when he had that slider going at that back foot, he was unhittable.
Well, talking about Randy, you have a guy in Felix. How important is that if you're going to have a winning club to have that one guy that basically stands out in front of everybody else? How important is that to you, Lloyd?
Oh, it's extremely important, Mike. I mean, you got to have that one guy that, you know, that stops streaks or continues streaks, you know. And Felix is that guy. Really, if you really think about the performance that this guy put on last year. I can remember sitting there in Cleveland, I tapped Trent on the leg, and I said, you know, we're watching history tonight. He said, what do you mean? I said, this guy is doing something that probably, and I say probably because he's so good, he may do it again. But probably will never, ever be, done again in the history of the game. I know not in our lifetime. I mean, it was just a tremendous performance. And for him not to win the Cy Young, I was just blown away. I just could not believe it. To think that he went out 17 games in a row and gave you 7-plus innings and 2 runs or less. That's over half your starts, you know, in a season. And it's just a phenomenal, phenomenal performance by Felix. And I was really disappointed that he didn't win the Cy Young.
And Lloyd, you know Felix better than anybody. How do you think that will affect him going forward?
Oh, I think it'll make him even better. you know, selfishly, I'm kind of tickled a little bit because I think he's going to be even better than he was last year in a lot of different aspects of his game. And I know one thing, when folks tell him that he wasn't good enough, he goes out to prove him wrong, and I think he'll do that this year.
That's what he made it sound like, too. Lloyd, we really appreciate you taking the time from your home to dial us up and chat a little Mariners baseball. What a season it was last year, 87 wins, and no reason for, well, not seeing more this coming season. We can't wait to catch up with you again in Arizona, Lloyd. So thanks for joining us.
All right, guys. I appreciate it.
The wind and the pitch swung on. Fly ball well hit. Straightaway center field. Gutierrez going back to the track, to the wall. Looks up. Goodbye, baseball. Seth Smith with his eighth home run of the year. Straightaway center, and the A's lead 1-0 here in the second.